Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
The Whoopee is back. It'll be back. In 9 hours and 8 minutes, the Houston Astros will be back on the field. Opening day is upon us. Shout out to the Loopholes. If you listen, you are one. We've had a lot going on this year as the calendar has turned in 2021. No city has endured as much off-field drama as the city of Houston. You have two rebuilds going on, really front and center. A franchise quarterback wanting to get out of town. A franchise player, one of the best players in franchise history, being traded by the Houston Rockets. Two rebuilds. It's rebuild season. Two out of three major teams in town. But the Houston Astros, as they have been a long time, they remain the best on-field product, and they remain the Whoopee. 4946 on the text line. What the hell is a Whoopee?
You don't know what a Whoopee is?
Bud, it's a feeling of comfort. It's a blankie.
You're a little blankie.
If you don't know what a Whoopee is, just watch the Houston Astros tonight. As a Houston sports fan, you're going to feel it.
Everybody's had some kind of woobie or blankie. I had a pillow until I could. I was probably 12. But yeah, here's the thing with the Astros. We're all excited about opening day, and you hear a lot of corny. Hey, I just want to. It's just the best opening day of all sports. I don't necessarily. I mean,
I knew Andrew Bogus was going to pull that crap
Sports.
I mean,
it's kind of trite. It's kind of been played out. Okay, you feel that way. I think two things really jump out about this opening day. Just because we didn't have last year, really, in a normal sense in baseball, it does feel a little different, right? It just hits you a little differently. And then the second thing that makes it so special with the Astros, if you're going into 2020, okay? The team that you would blame the least for a complete rebuild would be the Astros. Because Rockets with Harden and everything going on and making their run, Texans with Deshaun and coming off of, huge optimism and all that. Astros, scandal, lose your manager, lose your general manager. You wouldn't have blamed them at all for just kind of hitting reset, at least. If not a rebuild, at least some sort of, they did hit a reset. And yet they're still chugging along. That's what makes it so cool with these guys. They were all loyal. They've all stayed here. I get Garrett Cole left, but that was not, had nothing to do with anything other. Maybe it had a little bit to do with the cheating scandal, but I just feel like the Astros are just, they're plugging along, man. It makes this opening day even more special for that reason.
And it's also a little bit different around here because, regardless of how you felt about the Texans, I think since 2017 you felt good because they had a quarterback.
Yeah, you never would have guessed of a rebuild.
They were going to have a quarterback. No, you did not
ever
see a rebuild coming.
Rockets,
but,
too.
But, you always had the Rockets at this point where you didn't feel like they were going to be, one of the favorites for the NBA championship.
Yeah, but
the
once
Western
Golden
Conference,
State started sliding back.
You had some hope.
Yeah.
They're a lost cause right now.
And instead, we got rebuild and a catastrophe going on with the Texans, even though they're trying to sweep it all up. Rockets, okay, we're all optimistic about Steven Silas and Raphael Stone, but, man, what a disaster. I think they have the second or third worst record now.
Which is not the biggest disaster, if you ask me.
But I'm just saying, going into 2019, 2020, let's say, you're like, I wouldn't blame the Astros for just like, all right, let's just start over. I would absolutely blame the Texans and the Rockets, and those are the two that are doing it.
And here we are, opening day, and most importantly, the final countdown towards a potential extension for Carlos Correa. Once that first pitch is thrown, no more contract talk, according to Carlos Correa. That's where we're at right now with that. I actually am okay with not extending Carlos Correa. I think he misses too many games. An average of 50 in his four full seasons, 40 overall. I would not extend Carlos Correa, but I do understand that the market is going to be such to where Carlos Correa could leave town. But I also know Jim Crane's willing to write the check. So if Carlos Correa gets a hefty offer from, say, the Yankees or the Red Sox or the Angels, I do think Jim Crane will, at the very least, he's not going to go down without making at least a matching or competitive offer. So I think there is that. And I just want to see Carlos Correa put it together over the course of an entire season.
Look, you and I disagree on that. I just feel like you could have locked him up for 22, 24 maybe. The $20 million offer they made for 6 years, as Adam Splane explained to us just a little while ago, and you can go back on odyssey.com and hear that. It was really good baseball talk from our guy Adam Splane. You can rewind that, et cetera. As he explained, not only was it an insult, they shouldn't have even made it. Because given what the market is, what Lindor got, and 6 years, you want me to hit the market again when I'm 33? Nah, man. It's got to be 10 years. It's got to be starting at $300 million. I get your point. You make a solid argument. I just disagree with it. And the biggest reason is, in my view, even though Jim Crane might open a checkbook, when you say we're not signing him by opening day, you're pretty much saying goodbye.
It's the typical buyer-seller outlook to where I don't think you really have to. I don't think you really have to take a side and not dig in on it. But I can see both perspectives, and I kind of side with the Astros line of thinking in that, man, Francisco Lindor kind of set the market yesterday, and I think Francisco Lindor is a better player than Carlos Correa. That's just my opinion. He misses about 40 less games a season. I think Lindor is better. I'm assuming that if Carlos Correa is smart, Carlos Correa is at least going to ask for over $300 million
for
10 years. That's for sure where it is. And if I'm Jim Crane and I'm looking at this, I'm wondering, as this team gets older, as Jose Altuve gets older, as Yuli Gurriel disappears, as Michael Brantley gets older, as George Springer is gone, who knows what's going to happen with Kyle Tucker, I'm going to have to rely on this guy a lot more than I currently do. And if I give this guy $350 million, it's one thing to have this awesome Astros core around him to where he can afford to miss 40 games and then come back fresh in October. But as I rely on him and I pay him more and the core goes away.
Yeah.
Now you can still replace the core, but this core goes away. What we've known goes away 5 years into that contract or whatever. How much different am I going to look at Carlos Correa when I have to depend on him more, if he can't stay in the lineup and he's out of the lineup, you know, once every 4 days or whatever, especially when we need him most?
Yeah, look, and that pretty much fits every player. I mean, some players have proven to be more durable, and then all of a sudden, if they get a series of injuries, you start to wonder, you know, how much you can count on them. I'm just saying, I feel like you're saying goodbye to Carlos Correa. And partially because of the kind of the ill will, you know, that you're doing here. I mean, his comments were very pointed, very direct.
He's an emotional guy.
He is an emotional
guy. I
wonder where that comes from.
I've been told that's a Puerto Rican thing.
No, I was being facetious, yes.
I've totally been told that.
No, I agree.
Iggy?
No.
Whoa.
I've been told that.
It's a stereotype.
I've been told that.
It's a stereotype, but some stereotypes come from the reality of that thing. Anyway, so the fact that he's insulted, didn't want the 6-year contract, and they're not going to have it done by today, I think it's a done deal. He'll be somewhere else, like, almost no matter the season he has.
And I also do wonder on the other side of things, regardless of where you sit, and we've had the point-counterpoint conversation on this, I do wonder how much he really does want to just sign long-term for the Astros, or if a guy like Carlos Correa, who's represented by an entertainment agent, who has a wife who appears to want to expand her brand, I do wonder if, as much as Carlos Correa can say, I want this offer, I want that offer, because the baseball market is what it is, and a lot of times potential like this gets paid no matter what, no matter how many games are missed, mm-hmm. I do wonder how much he really wants to avoid hitting this market, especially after you have somewhat a relatively normal season. Owners are going to be probably willing to spend more money. The Angels are going to be off the books when it comes to Albert Pujols, so who knows what they do with that Disney money.
Yeah.
I do wonder, as much as Carlos Correa can go up there and act pissed off and talk about, I want to, you know, if as soon as the season starts, we're not negotiating, I do wonder from his perspective if he would rather hit the market than just sign today.
Or as he might say, oh, yeah. Why? Who wouldn't? We're talking pick your city, pick your team. He's never going to be surrounded by a bunch of chumps, you know, because, you know, you were talking about what happens when this lineup starts to deteriorate. No, he'll pick the team, pick the city, pick the market. He's got an entertainment agent, which this was what really blew me away when he signed with his agent, who's one of the major entertainment agencies. The guy had to qualify to become a baseball agent. He's so onto the entertainment side that he wasn't even registered or take the test, whatever it is, to become a baseball. So he did. Now he's representing Correa. It's New York or L.A., man. I mean, like, you talk about a lot of moving parts. Some of the moving parts are he wished he could have gotten the deal here. They didn't pay him. Now he's upset. He's going to go on. The other moving part is he's probably thinking, cool. You know, now I can go, you know, go to L.A. or New York and be a megastar.
I don't know the Angels situation, but I just know that Albert Pujols, it seems like he's had the crappiest contract in baseball for damn near 7 years now.
Yeah.
And he's going to be
done all right for himself, though.
He's done well. He's done very, very well.
He played 37 years now?
I don't know. There was like a story that he's like 7 years older than he is.
And he's still playing.
Something like that. He's still doing the same, especially when he plays the Astros, he's been known to hit. But mm-hmm. he's going to have his farewell tour. I just wonder where this money's going to be. But there's going to be money thrown in the direction of Carlos Correa. Make no mistake about it. And we'll see what happens. Hell, who knows? You might have a breaking news sounder where Carlos Correa signs on the dotted line and he's going to be in Astros. Ho-hum. There you go. But right now, it does not appear to be the case. By the way, opening day is upon us. Gerrit Cole on the bump right now for the Yankees.
Just started first game.
Pretty sight. This is the first time former Astro Gerrit Cole is going to get to pitch at Yankee Stadium in front of his father. Didn't get to do it last year. So the guy who grew up a Yankee fan, all the drama with Gerrit Cole 2 years ago, now it's kind of shifted to Carlos Correa. He's going to get to pitch in front of his father. So there's
him.
A lot of...
I mean, I know there's bad feelings, but good for him.
There's a lot of stuff going on. Good for Gerrit Cole, man. Yeah. Get that money. Go
and
do
lifelong
your thing.
Dream. Yankee Stadium. Dad's there. Pretty cool.
Landry Locker, yeah. John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. The Astros... entertaining storylines coming up in 30 minutes. But coming up next, Deshaun Watson's defense team. They've kind of felt things out early on in the legal process, but in the last few days, they've gotten aggressive. We'll hear the latest next.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Rusty Harden. Statement this morning. Not a lawsuit. A statement. This is what Rusty Harden, the attorney of Deshaun Watson, had to say in response to Tony Busby's, what word should I use, skepticism about the HPD?
Yeah, it's good.
Integrity?
Questioning the integrity.
Well, he said he wasn't.
Well, he also said, I'm not saying, I'm just saying.
Here's what Rusty Harden had to say in response to Tony Busby's words about the HPD. I will say, before we hear from Rusty Harden, let's hear what Tony Busby had to say originally when he made his first public statement about the Deshaun Watson allegations. Here's what Busby had to say originally about his cooperation with the Houston Police Department.
I've informally been contacted by the Houston Police Department. It is our intention for the clients that are willing to do so to put together a package and to submit it to the Houston Police Department of the information that we have.
Okay, so that's what he said originally. Now he's skeptical. He doesn't trust the HPD. At least that's how I read what he said. Here's what Rusty Harden had to say about that. And I think this is the most aggressive that we've heard Rusty Harden. And this is less than 24 hours after he had the 18 statements from masseuses who said they had professional experiences with Deshaun Watson. Since March 19th, Mr. Tony Busby has repeatedly promised to submit evidence to the Houston Police Department in support of his anonymous client's complaints against Deshaun Watson. So far, he has not done so. Now, in response to media inquiries, Mr. Busby has abandoned his promise altogether and in his words, will go, quote, elsewhere to provide his evidence to investigative authorities. His latest excuse for failing to go to law enforcement is also his lamest. Throwing out the word lame.
Lame.
Anyone who has dealt with HPD, as I have for many years, would know that Mr. Busby's suggestion that the department would overlook legitimate complaints based upon a family connection of one of its officers is ludicrous. It is also insulting to the dedicated professionals at HPD and to common sense. Mr. Busby's claimed fear of HPD's partiality is inconsistent with his prior praise of the department's response to his burglary of his home during his recent campaign. I would respectfully suggest that Mr. Busby's failure to go to law enforcement does not result from some baseless fear that HPD will not fairly investigate. Instead, it is from the knowledge that his parade of anonymous allegations could not survive the rigorous inquiry of trained investigators or the need to attest to the truth of the allegations under oath. For our part, we will continue to learn about the cases in any way that we can. We and Deshaun will always remain available to any law enforcement or regulatory agency who desires our cooperation. Apparently, Mr. Busby is unwilling to do the same.
Just taking shots after shots after shots. Also planting all those ideas. You know, we know what they're doing here. It'll probably be within 6 or 8 hours. When Busby responds to his response to his response. They're just playing this game publicly. And he's throwing out all these opinions, too, like he's talking to a jury. I would respectfully suggest that's not what this is about. Let me tell you what this is about. It's an interesting game. It's entertaining, I'll tell you that. But if he's being truthful here, Rusty Harden, he doesn't want any of this to go to the criminal, to the HPD. Why would he? He's defending Deshaun Watson. This is good news for him. He's just taking shots, you know, because of it.
And, I mean, he's questioning the merit of the case.
The civil case. That's my point.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you asked, you know, Rusty Harden, do you want him to bring charges to HPD? Hell no. You know, I don't want to have to defend that, you know, against a criminal case. But so he's really just kind of trying to help his civil case, talking about, you know, Busby not having the whatever he's claiming to go to the legal authority.
This legal stuff just turns into a game.
And it is a game.
It's a new level of game with these two guys because they're just going back and forth. They're having pissing matches, and it's just, you know, I want to outdo you, and I'm going to wait till 10 p.m.
And
it's
the egos.
Drop. Like, I feel like Tony Busby, when he drops a statement, like, it's very, very different because Rusty Harden does it the opening of business. You know how you'll get an email from a boss will be like, this is due by close of business. Yeah. COB. We need this. Rusty Harden, I feel like, has that professional approach to where most of his statements come 10 a.m.,
yeah,
noon, during business hours.
Tony Busby's like a damn rapper dropping an album. It's going to drop at midnight. It's going to drop at 10 p.m. You don't even know when it's going to drop. It's just, it's like a damn rapper dropping an album.
It's
like,
happy hour somewhere. It's always about 5:30, 6 o'clock.
Can't even go to sleep. Like you're finishing up dinner or something like that. And then all of a sudden the Busby album drops on Facebook.
Look, Tony Busby is awesome. You know, what he does and has done is incredible.
As far as being successful, right?
It's incredible, yes. But Rusty Harden, the whole tone of that is also the adults are talking, Tony. You know, he has this whole tone of like, yeah, you might be in a different league now, which maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But I think Tony Busby's more than holding his own because the court of public opinion is clearly siding with
him. Does a lawyer have to, from a Deshaun Watson standpoint and what Deshaun Watson's going through, and we're four weeks away from the draft, and that's the deadline we both believe for a Watson trade to happen. Does Deshaun Watson have to approve Rusty Harden, or is there such trust with someone as successful as Rusty Harden to where it's just like, do whatever you want to do?
Yeah, he picked up a phone and just said, go defend this. Now he's cooperative. He has to be. And he has to give everything because Rusty needs the help, you know, all the help he can get.
But Rusty doesn't have to be like, hey, this is how we're doing it. This is how we're doing it.
He probably, just like out of courtesy or some staffer, you know, or something. You know, I'd like to know how many people are working on this case on both sides, like actual man hours, like, you know, hourly charges, you know, 15, 20, 50. I don't know.
It's a weird situation with this when it comes to civil cases, because there's really just middle ground and there's nothing absolute. Like the one side will say, well, this is unfair because you're doing this anonymous and you're just trying to get money. And then the other side will say, you know, you've got to be 100% supportive of anyone who makes claims and you got to protect them at any means necessary. It's a weird thing to dig into, and I think we're just so trained on social media, and I like the way it's been handled on this show. I truly do. Like, there's a lot of things you dig into. Like, I'm gonna dig in that I think the Astros are gonna win 95 games or whatever, and boom, that's my prediction. Or this team's gonna win the AFC, boom, that's my prediction.
Right.
But here, it's not really something you really have to dig into. There's no payoff for being right or wrong in this situation.
Well, that's a good point, because I was thinking the other day, you know how social media, you can say anything. You can just say anything at all, the most outrageous thing in the world on social media, and there's going to be some people who think it's true. These are just words right now, man. Tony Busby and Rusty Harden can pretty much say anything, too. None of this is going to be, I shouldn't say none of this. I said there are elements of this that they're not going to even want to put in court if it goes to a civil court. Right now, they're just playing that social media public relations game. Busby can come out and say, hey, Deshaun Watson, before every time he left a massage therapist, he asked if he could have a picture of their feet. Whatever. You could say anything right now. It's just words. It's when you get to court that it's gonna matter. So like Rusty's doing.
Is that okay with you? Is that okay with you?
They're both. Everybody's doing it. Both sides.
But not. I don't think Rusty's doing it as extreme as Busby. Is that all right with you?
No, it's not all right. I'm just saying that's how they're playing. That's how they're angling.
It just turns into a game with some of these guys.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's strange. Like it's almost like some sort of strategy game with Tony Busby, where it doesn't. I don't know. I don't want to say integrity, but he does seem to lack some integrity with the way that he presents it, and it's strange because it takes away from a lot of the stuff that we're used to. It seems kind of sociopathic, some of the stuff that he mentions.
Tony Busby doesn't care. That's the sad part.
Well, that's fine, but I mean, like, are we all right? So let me put it this way: just sitting here and watching this, and talk me through this, because I'm more so asking a question than making a statement. When it comes to the legal process, I think 100% it's important to protect anyone who accuses someone of sexual assault.
Sure.
I know that that's a slippery slope, and
sure,
I get
no,
the
I
negatives
agree with you.
Of it, but I think
you.
It is important. I really do.
I agree with you.
But I feel like Tony Busby's too protected if he is making a spectacle of this at the sake of Deshaun Watson, I feel like while it's important to protect people who do accuse athletes, yes, there's some money grabs, but there are also some victims that are scared to talk because it's embarrassing, man. Like it's embarrassing for them. And I don't say that in like a bad way. It's embarrassing. Like you feel shame.
That's why he's keeping it anonymous.
And it's sad. But don't you feel like if Tony Busby is truly just being a weasel at times and taking this to the limit and being very reckless with the Deshaun Watson situation, and he just doesn't care, as you said, don't you think there's a little bit too much protection for someone like that is doing this?
No. The reason is, look, we've all seen somebody on Twitter or Instagram come out and say something. I mean, the crazies would come out of everywhere. I mean, threats, I think the names are ultimately going to be known in court and certainly by both attorneys. But I look, man, you're putting people in harm's way potentially if you put someone's name out there. You really are. I mean, we know that by now.
No, I agree with that.
You know what I mean? So,
but
that's
why. No, I'm talking about Tony Busby. I'm talking about the way he's acting, the way that he has nothing to lose, the way that he can just come out here and say stuff. It just seems like. It seems like there has to. I don't even know how you would do it, but it does just seem like
the accountability in terms of.
It almost feels like he's trying to bring some attention to himself.
Yeah, of course he is. But to your other point about like, shouldn't he be a little more upstanding? Not publicly. You even said it yourself. First time you saw him put on his lawyer cap, he's dang impressive. Once he gets into that courtroom, if he gets into that courtroom on this case, it's going to be a whole different tune. That's what I'm saying. Right now, they can say anything. That's what we need to keep reminding ourselves. It's just words right now. It's just volleys. I've said that a couple of times. That's all they're doing. They can do anything, say anything publicly. Once they get in that court, if you say something, whatever, you know, you better darn well have the evidence and the proof.
It'll be interesting. It's going to be interesting. Looks like Rusty Harden is on the attack. We'll see what happens here. Up to 21 as of right now. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you. Coming up, it is opening day. The Land Lock storylines like only we can present them next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
All right, opening day, Land Lock style. The biggest storylines heading into opening day for the Houston Astros. The 2021 season, Astros' biggest storylines, rapid fire. Starting with the guy that's going to toe the rubber today, Zach Greinke. 9:07 first pitch, Zach Greinke. What the hell are we going to get from Greinke? Let's cuss and discuss that after we hear from the man himself on his excitement of pitching on the first day of the season.
Not really. Never cared about it. Still don't care about it. I guess it gives you a better chance of making more starts during the season. So that's about the main positive about it for me, is you got a better chance of making 32, 33, or 34, or 35 starts.
What are we going to see from Greinke? The answer to that question for me, I have no idea. Last year, you saw a very rough start. Then as soon as Justin Verlander goes down, Zach Greinke all of a sudden carries the rotation. Then he kind of appears to get a little bit bored, then flips the switch late in the season. Hell of a performance in the postseason the last time he was on the mound. What do you expect from Zach Greinke? The answer for me, and it might seem like a cop-out, I have no idea.
I have an idea. I could absolutely be dead wrong. I know he's getting up there. He's 37, I believe. But I think what you're going to get is someone that you don't really have to worry about. You know, he's gonna be there and eating up innings, getting people out. He's going to be in his own world, as he often is. But I think he's just sort of a – it's hard to put it in – like, reliable is the easy one, but I think he's just like a touchstone. You know, he's kind of the rock. That's the best way on that staff. They all respect him. Again, he lives in his own little world, but on the mound, it's just consistency and reliability.
It wasn't last year.
No, I know. But year in, year out, you're gonna get. Well, look, I just opened up You got a 10-year stretch. These are the win totals. 15, 17, 19, 13, 17, 15, 18. Dude, that's what you're going to get.
I hope so. What are you going to get from the young arms? Astro storylines continuing, Lane Lockstar. What are you going to get from the young arms after a potentially beneficial season last year? Now, Jose Urquidy, I think, has some of the highest upside on the rotation as far as being a pleasant surprise. Last year was a rough year for him because he basically spent 30 days in a hotel room, didn't get up with a big club until late, looked good in the postseason. So I'll throw Urquidy aside. But when it comes to Christian Javier, Blake Taylor, Enoli Paredes, Abreu, what can we expect from these guys? Because I think last year, without fans in the stands, without opposing teams having a grasp of what they were about, and with a shorter season in which those players did not know what they were about, didn't get as many opportunities to face them, I do wonder if some of these young guys that we saw last year contribute at a relatively high level, especially that early in their career, I wonder if maybe some of these guys come down to earth, like the Javiers, the Taylors, the Paredes, or Who knows, maybe they take the next step. But I do think last year, in a strange way, benefited these guys.
I'm actually a little less optimistic about starting pitching over the course of the year than most people. I think Lance McCullers is going to have a huge year. I think I just talked about Zach Greinke. Some of these other guys are just it's a different world. For some of them, you know, back to 162 games, they haven't put together that year after year, even if it's just 2 years of consistency. I think they have it. I think Javier is going to have a good year. Obviously, I think they're going to be able to piece it together. But then I go back to one thing I mentioned to you yesterday that is just one of the truisms in baseball. The starting pitching staff, the first day of the year is never the same as the last day of the year. You're going to have to go through some guys. You just are. Whatever the injury is, whatever that happens, you know, bad performance. I like the top two. I'm still not skeptical, not as optimistic on the others.
Lance McCullers, you just mentioned him. Next storyline, what's he going to look like with a fresh extension in the second year after Tommy John surgery? If you look at the numbers, that second year after the TJ surgery is when you start to bounce back and when guys start putting it in the rear view and they start looking more like their old self. Obviously, the Astros saw enough from him in the spring to where they felt comfortable enough to where they gave him the extension. It's not like they just randomly gave it to him. Mm-hmm. They were watching him throw and they were seeing how he looked and how he felt. And they felt that they needed to give him that 5-year extension. So obviously they feel good about him. You feel good about him.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to expect from Lance McCullers is the next storyline. 8 hours and change away, about 8.5 hours away from the start of the year.
Yeah, I just said it. I have high expectations for him. It's the other three that I'm a little wondering about. But he's just the will, the toughness. He just emanates that. And I think he's kind of like the Alex Bregman of the pitching staff. You know, there may be players that you would consider more consistent, maybe a slight notch above him, in this case Zach Greinke. But man, he just brings it every day with that little edge.
Next storyline for the 2021 season, Jose Urquidy. What exactly is he? I feel like we kind of got cheated by not getting to see Urquidy at the start of last year because he did have that nice final stretch of the season in 2019. You saw him pitch well in the World Series, and you wondered what this guy was. Could he be a top of the rotation guy one day? Last year was rough for him, obviously, mm-hmm. with the COVID issues and everything. Didn't get here till late, but even then, he showed some signs of being a pretty damn good big league pitcher. 25 years old, I've seen some writers from The Athletic say that Jose Urquidy could be in Cy Young, get Cy Young votes. I think of all the guys that could potentially pleasantly surprise people the most, not only in the rotation, but on the entire roster, mm-hmm. I think Jose Urquidy could be that guy.
I wouldn't question it, but I've got another guy that I think could be that guy that we'll get to. His stuff is just wicked, you know, and he had a great look. read what you want to in spring training, but all reports were this guy was just dominant. I think it's there. I'd like to see him start more than, what's his career high, like 6 or 7 games, 8 games, something like that. He needs to get through the...
Need to see a whole season.
Yeah, he needs to get to the second half of the season after the All-Star break and see what happens.
Odorizzi. This was the big offseason signing. We did not expect to see it. The Framber Valdez injury apparently not connected to it, but Jake Odorizzi is going to be in the rotation. Before last year he said was kind of fluky, had the blisters on the hand and everything like that. Jake Odorizzi, what are we going to see from this guy?
Look, it was a great signing. He had the one blip in his season. I think he's going to be what he's been. I mean, you could, again, he's kind of like we're talking about Zach Greinke and what you can expect from him. To get him from Minnesota was just, you know, pretty consistent. Always eats up inning, gets a lot of starts. You talk about how the rotation is never the same at the end of the year. He's always there. He gets 33 starts, 34 starts, whatever it may be, year in, year out. So just consistent and dependable.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig with you here on Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610. Let's go to the bullpen. And I think this is going to be very important. I think this is going to be a good bullpen. For the most part, I think this is going to be a very good bullpen. I think there's a lot of upside. But it all is going to come down to how you close out games. It's cliche, Biggie. Ryan Pressly, what is he going to look like on the back end of the bullpen? Last year, after being an eighth inning guy early on, he moved into the closer role. And it was kind of a roller coaster. There were times where Ryan Pressly looked lost. There were times where he looked good. I'm not going to say that Ryan Pressly has to be what he was or pitch like he did in 2019 or when he was an all-star for the Stros.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am going to say is if this team wants to win the division and if this team wants to be a team that we look
You're
at
right.
as a contender, he has to be closer to what he was in 2019 than what he was in 2020. He doesn't have to be that great,
yeah,
but he has to be closer to that than what he was last year.
I actually think ultimately over the course of the season, Dusty's going to mix up the back end of his rotation a little bit. I really do. It's going to be hard. When he's good, he's really, really good. That guy is awesome when he's good. But I just don't have the confidence that he's got that extra edge over the course of the year. And I'm glad you brought him up because one player that I've just been reading a lot about and I think I have high expectations for, you heard Adam Spillane talk about it earlier, and you can hear that whole interview on Odyssey.com if you want to rewind it. Enoli Paredes really intrigues me.
I like the way you say that. You say a little more flavor than me.
Enoli Paredes.
Okay.
Come on. What are you doing to me, man? I think he's got something.
No, he's got something.
He's got something, man.
He's got some gas is what he's got.
Yeah, I think that. And again, this might be a race card.
He might be your closer of the future.
And here's the thing. Dominican relievers, man.
Yeah.
With that kind of wicked stuff.
Yeah.
And that kind of power.
More powerful than they look. It's like Rivera. I mean, Rivera's not a big guy.
He just compared him to Rivera. Wow. Breaking news here. I thought I was high on him, Figgy.
I'm just talking about little guys throwing hard.
Landry Locker reporting that Enoli Paredes will be the next Mariano Rivera.
Not saying that. Fake news. The
catcher. I love this guy. He's
fun to watch.
He's one I'm going to keep an eye on all year long.
It's going to be interesting. Is he going to be – if he could emerge as that eighth inning guy and Pressly be the closer, I think that would be the ideal situation if someone could establish himself there. The catchers. Martin Maldonado, how much does he have left in the tank? He looked good last year. Early in the season, there were stretches where he even kind of carried the offense, but – the return of Castro with Maldonado, you now have a left-handed bat at catcher that is a former All-Star, and you have Martin Maldonado. I don't feel extremely confident in the catcher position for the Astros, but I don't feel bad, if that makes sense. I feel okay about it, But I don't feel like it's, if you compare it to other catching situations around the league, I would say it's maybe in the lower half.
I just know what to expect. I don't have high expectations for them offensively. I mean, come on. But I think defensively, that's what you expect, right? You expect them to be able to, and I'm talking about Jason Castro too. You know, Martin Maldonado and Castro just to hold it down defensively at the top end of the league. I'll take that. And then take whatever hitting you get from them as gravy.
8 hours, 15 minutes away from opening day. Storylines, landlocked style. The body trade. There was a body trade by the Houston Astros. Alex Bregman put on weight. Yuli Gurriel lost weight. 20 pounds put on by Alex Bregman. Yuli Gurriel loses 15. Be interesting to see what that looks like. I'm focusing more on the Messiah. I want to see what the baseball Messiah looks like. Yeah. A little bit more bulky.
Yeah, how many stories are going to be written about, hey, well, you took off all that weight. How's it affecting you this year at the plate or in the field? Well, not the field. You know, hey, Alex, you put on all that muscle mass, 15 pounds of muscle. How's it affecting you? Is it affecting your – I mean, it's going to be on and on and on. You're right. I think Bregman, all indications are no harm, no foul, and he may be, you know, even better. But it is, yeah, it's definitely a storyline. I'm glad you brought that up.
Next storyline, and this is two with arguably the best player in franchise history, the yips.
Yeah.
And batting leadoff. Jose Altuve apparently has the yips last year.
He did.
We'll see if those continue. And how's he going to look in that leadoff spot taking over for George Springer?
Not worried about him in the leadoff spot. Enough speed, and he does have some base running savvy. Sometimes he makes mistakes. To put pressure on defenses early in games. I'm more worried about the yips. I'm not predicting anything, but that was a very real thing last year. It was very clear that it was a very real thing. A lot of time has passed since the cheating scandal, but not for fans. You know, when fans are getting back, you don't think the A's are going to have something to say today? I mean, come on. They're going to have, what did Spillane say? They're going to have 12,000 people there, I believe. It's going to start. Right. Yep. You know, it's going to start. Fans are going to have signs. Fans are going to have all kinds of heckling. We'll see how Altuve responds.
I have that as a storyline as well. The road atmosphere. Carlos Correa, contract year. We've talked about that. That's one of the main storylines. Again, 9 hours or 8 hours, 10 minutes if they want to reach a deal with Carlos Correa. So that clock is ticking. Michael Effen Brantley. We thought he was going to go to Toronto with George Springer. However, Jim Crane writes the check. Michael Effen Brantley, the return. Here's Lance McCullers Jr. talking about Brantley almost leaving.
Kind of broke my heart a little bit. I was like really sad, actually. And then Brantley came back. So that was really like pure emotion and pure happiness. We got Uncle Mike back. He's a heck of a teammate. He's someone that you want around in the clubhouse on your team. Obviously, his play has spoken for itself for the last few years. I'm very happy to have him back.
There you go. Do we even need to say what we expect from Michael Brantley?
Last spring training game, usually the vets don't even play before they break camp, and they came back 2-for-2, two doubles.
There you go.
I mean, just
ho-hum.
Yeah.
Return of Alvarez, Yordan Alvarez. Two knees, two surgeries, but he is back. And I wonder if Alex Bregman is going to get his autograph or something, because here's the Messiah talking about Yordan Alvarez.
He has an aura about him. He had one since the day he stepped foot in the big leagues. Never forget him looking for a changeup his second at bat and hitting one oppo off the gas tank in left center. It was just amazing to witness. He's just a stud. When you come up at that age and you're that calm in those at bats, and you just go out there and do it every single day and post and put up great at bat after great at bat. It's super impressive. And he now just has, whenever he's around, he has an aura about him. It's just, it's fun to be around and you want to be a part of it.
Just the way you said, he's just a stud. Guy's got some respect. It's not the first time he's talked about Yordan like that.
What's Yordan going to do?
Another big question mark.
Give me a home run prediction.
18.
What?
18. I can't, until I see him have a full season, I can't predict one.
Might have that by May.
Yeah. And then what happens in June?
Can Miles Straw
full season? 42.
Okay. 18. Wow. Can Miles Straw stay in the lineup? Yes or no? Spillane didn't seem worried about it. That was interesting to me.
Because of center field.
Yeah.
And I think that's what keeps him in the lineup. They need some help in center field. They were looking for outfielders up until the last week of spring training. They were talking about making a trade for outfielders. So I think that's what keeps him in there, and that's why they're putting him down in the lineup.
Final question, Big Tuck. My guy Kyle Tucker.
Big T. U-C-K-K.
One of the most pleasant surprises of 2020. Really a guy who, because of the injuries, was able to be in the lineup every day, and I think it paid off. If Big Tuck can continue to progress like he did last year, that's going to be really interesting. I'm very intrigued to see what four-hole Tuck, by the way, is going to do. Apparently batting cleanup.
Yeah, he's batting fourth tonight. With Correa behind him and Bregman in front of him, I think. That's a pretty good spot to be right there.
I'm intrigued by this. Yeah. Cannot wait. The Astros, baby. The Whoopi is back. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig. Coming up and around the NFL, Mark Ingram had a press conference yesterday, and I got to tell you, as the podium critic, I have not been more disappointed in a press conference by a Houston Texan. You'll hear it next.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.